Get connected with WFAN to talk about your favorite teams. The Fan on the Odyssey iHeart and TuneIn apps.
How are we doing on this Monday morning? Hey, 406, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. Got you for one more hour as we take you to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show, 888-808-1019. We got Romney on the other side. It's not okay, John. It's not okay. As both of our teams suck, but the Yankees have taken it to spectacular fashions. The Mets lose 2 out of 3 to San Francisco. They've lost 5 of 6 after a 7-game winning streak. A terrible pitching performance from Frankie Montas. The top of the order. And this team continues to struggle with runners in scoring position. Juan Soto is in a major funk. Losing to a San Francisco Giants team that kind of gave up on the season, traded away all their pieces, including Rodgers, out of the bullpen to the Mets specifically. But the New York Yankees, as bad as that is, as bad as losing 5 out of 6 after a 7-game winning streak, as bad as it is to lose 2 out of 3 at home to San Francisco, watching the Yankees just absolutely just vomit all over themselves on Friday night, have it be just an absolute repudiation of the trade deadline that we were all so excited about, to be coming off of finally winning some games in a row and finally playing well inside the division and winning the last 3 games of a 4-game set against Tampa Bay, including a wacky one where they had to come back and Volpe's hitting home runs. And you're feeling a little bit better about the team. They shored up some holes in the bullpen. They bring in, you know, Bednar, and they bring in Doval, and they bring in Bird, and they bring in Caballero. They bring in 7 players overall over the entire, you know, trade deadline period. And you feel like they've reshaped the roster. They're just about to get hot. They're winning games without Aaron Judge. They're scoring a ton of runs without Aaron Judge. They open up this 3-game set in Miami, taking a 6-0 lead. They're stealing bases. Rodon's throwing a no-hitter. Every reason for a little bit of optimism. The Blue Jays are losing to the Kansas City Royals. Friday night felt like the Yankees were about to do something and start taking off, and instead, every single reliever they brought here absolutely kills it for them. The utility man they bring in to steal bases does it, leads to them scoring a run, taking the lead, but then he can't field a single out in the outfield. It gets past him, sets up the game-winning run, ties the game, sets up the game-winning run, absolute debacle, and then they don't show up the next 2 days, continue to play lousy, disgusting, mistake-ridden baseball. They get shut down offensively over the next 2 games after scoring 12 the night before. They are now in 3rd place, firmly behind the Boston Red Sox, who took care of the Houston Astros and are now 1.5 games behind them. They head into Texas tonight for a huge series against the Rangers team that is trying to surge its way back into the postseason this year. You saw Luis Gil, who is probably, and we haven't talked enough about this, Luis Gil, who is so important to this team. Because even with the deadline that I still think is going to impact the Yankees in a positive way, I still think those are good relievers. It was an ugly start to their Yankee tenure. But I still think Brian Cashman had a good trade deadline. The only thing he did not do was add a starting pitcher. And Luis Gil coming back made his first start of the season yesterday. He is going to be as important a member of this Yankee team as anyone else the next 50 games. He has got to round into shape. He has got to be someone you trust in a postseason start. Otherwise, the Yankees are going to throw 2 rookies in a postseason series if they're lucky enough to play 4 games in a postseason series, if they're lucky enough to get to a postseason series. And watching him yesterday go out there and, you know, still throw 97 to 98, look like he had some decent stuff, but be all over the place, give up, you know, 5 runs and 3 2/3 or whatever it was, not have a good performance, not look sharp. You can give him a break. You're not, you know, looking for dominance, but an ugly finish to that series. And for me, the manager, I know you've all been screaming about it for a long time, at least a lot of you, that he's a terrible manager and needs to go. I disagree with you on some things. I don't think I put a lot. Jazz, you know, trying to make a play on a pop-up is the dumbest thing I've ever seen, no doubt. They've made mistakes, no doubt. They have played sloppy baseball, absolutely no doubt. A lot of the things I don't put on the manager as much as most of you do. I don't think it's his job to make sure Wells knows how many outs there are as a professional baseball player. I think Jazz has got to be well aware that he can't be, you know, doubled off of first base. There are things I blame him for, things I don't. But to me, now we're getting in the territory where this team is not listening. Like, you want to talk about reasons to get rid of a manager, and we'll get more into whether or not they should move on from him, or whether or not how hot his seat is, and whether or not the Yankees would have any appetite off of giving him an extension to move on from him, or does this team need that necessarily? But right now, you can't argue. You can't argue that this team is dramatically underachieving. Dramatically underachieving. And you can't argue that coming off of that loss, this team showed nothing in the next 2 days. Nothing but bad play and mistakes and poor coaching on the base paths. Just the same crap we have seen. They're on a roll. They blow a game you can't blow. And then they chose not to show up the next 2 days. That's on the manager. The message did not get through to this team for Saturday and Sunday that those games are important. And you know why? Because he didn't treat Friday night like it was important. Continuing to go to the pitchers that they got at the trade deadline in Doval for the ninth. After clearly seeing the trend, getting a feel for that game, you announced Devin Williams was the closer. Go put him out there and make sure you win that game Friday night. And that game Friday night and the lack of urgency from the manager who weighed, you know, giving time off to Weaver and Williams above winning the baseball game, it showed up the next 2 days. And we talk a lot about accountability. I think urgency is much more to the point of the issue for the New York Yankees. The manager didn't show any on Friday. The team didn't show any the next 2 days. This team is far better than this. I look at this roster. I look at this team. They are far better than the way they're playing. They are better than getting swept in Miami off the trade deadline. And right now, this team has 50 games to figure it out. And I don't know what kind of Yankee fan, I'm as optimistic as any, I don't know what Yankee fan would have any kind of optimism with the way they've played as of late. 888-808-1019. Let's get to your calls. Steve in Bayside. What's up, Steve?
Well, I'm sure Weaver and Williams have gotten plenty of rest the last couple of days.
They certainly have. And look, I understood the plan. I did. They've pitched a lot because they've needed to. There was only three arms you could trust. Hill, Weaver, and Williams have pitched a lot. You got three new relievers coming to the team. Two of them specifically hardly pitched over the last week because they knew they were getting traded. And so I understood the plan. 6-0 lead over Miami especially. It's like, hey, I'll cakewalk through this thing. I don't have to use Weaver Williams. But as that game unfolded and the nature of how it went down and Bird and Bednar being awful and blowing the game and then rallying back from being down 10-9, that's a game you have to win. Toronto was losing. Like, you've got to show urgency. And to just throw Duvall in his first spot as a Yankee into a closing role on one of those wacky games, like, I just had a major problem with it.
Yeah, well, and that's been a constant with Boone throughout, is that he... Mm-hmm. Doesn't show that in-game flexibility.
Correct.
That's been
he doesn't
the
deviate.
Showed up.
I've said that along. I don't. Most of the time that I defend Boone, it's because I don't put every error on him. But there is error. I don't put every mistake on him. But there is no doubt. There is too much of a. This is the plan. We're sticking to it. Like, there's not enough. You could feel that coming a mile away. Adapt. Don't just stick to the plan. Adapt. Recognize that the pitchers who came here today are blowing the game. Let's not make it 3-for-3. Let's put a guy I know I've seen in this uniform save games for me. Let me go that way instead of just hoping Duvall can find it. Like, he sticks to the plan no matter what.
Yeah.
Days off. And, you know, that people complain about they don't care about hot. Days off. It doesn't matter what happened the day before. It doesn't matter how good the player's going. They established 2 weeks ago that this was a good day for Judge to get off or this one to get off because it's going to be a lefty pitcher on the mound or whatever. And these are the kind of, they do not deviate from plans. I think that is one of, and they don't show urgency. Those are the two biggest things from Aaron Boone.
Yeah. And And by the way, they have underperformed if you want to look at their pie fact.
Absolutely.
They have underperformed.
I don't care what anybody says. They have, there is no doubt. Their run differential's 92. Now, that's not the be-all, end-all of statistics, but it's as good as any to indicate what kind of team you have. How many more runs do you score than you give up? It's a run-scoring competition. I mean, that's as good an idea of what the team should be as any. And this team should be far better with that kind of run differential.
Yeah, it's a run scoring and a run suppressing.
Yes.
And it's been the Yankees have not been very good in that area. You know, there's a different way to look at the activity for the trade deadline this year. This was a frenetic. There was just so much activity, outpaced recent years by a lot, with the number of trades. And in recent years, and certainly last year, teams were not going to go out too hard to improve their teams because the Yankees were the clear favorites and the Dodgers were the clear favorites last year, and everybody knew it.
Mm-hmm.
This year, everyone says it was wide open. Well, you could look at it and say, yeah, okay, it was wide open for all these other teams, but that's also to say that the Yankees and Dodgers just aren't as good this year as they were last year. It's a simple, obvious thing to say,
mm-hmm.
but even all of that activity during the trade deadline, it's kind of saying this Yankee team just isn't that good.
Yeah, I don't know if you could draw the line directly to the Yankees and Dodgers alone. I mean, anything could happen in a 5-7 game series, 3-game series in the wild card. Like I the idea that the Yankees aren't as good, because I don't know. Do you remember watching the Yankees last year? Now it wasn't this bad for this long, I guess, and they had Cole back, but like they had J.D. Davis hitting in the cleanup spot. Like, the idea that the Yankees were just, I know they had Soto and Judge, but, like, I don't know if you could just look at teams didn't do anything because the Yankees and Dodgers were destined to get to the World Series. I don't know if you could draw the line. And then the idea that they just look at the Yankees now and say, oh, they're, you know, because the truth is a lot of the teams are better. Not than the Yankees necessarily, although they are, but like the other teams are better. Like the Boston Red Sox are showing they can be good. The Detroit Tigers from the jump have been the best team in the American League. They showed they have a lot of talent. The Astros are pitching their ass off. Like the idea that other, you know, teams are basing it solely on the Yankees and Dodgers, I don't think that's fair. But it was a fast-paced trade deadline, and a lot of bullpen arms were moved, that's for sure. And teams got better. And the American League this year is better. It's better. It's better than it was last year. There's no doubt. Robert in Staten Island. What's up, Robert?
Hey, I love, I think you're really intelligent. I love listening to you. First time I've called you.
Oh, well, thank you.
And I wanted to talk about Boone and Jazz Chisholm. I think to be a Yankee is to be intelligent, play with a relaxed intensity, elegance, and clutchness, and professionalism. And I'm not seeing that right now from the team. And I think that the manager's job is to get the best out of his ball players.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, as you said, when they pitch well, they're not hitting. When they hit well, they're not pitching. And when they do both, they're playing stupid baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So I think right now, I like Boone. I've liked him for a long time. Right now, it might be time for a change. I'm not sure. I would like your opinion on that.
Yeah, I don't think firing the manager right now would do anything. I think Boone, he went to the World Series last year. I think he has been, in his time with the New York Yankees, a solid manager for them. They went to the World Series last year. I think he's earned the right of these last 50 games. That's how I feel about it. If these 50 games go the way the last 50 games have gone, then I would look to make a change in the offseason. But I still think this team can rally. I still think it could happen under Boone. They've holding players. I mean, we say we want people held accountable, and then we mock them for yelling at the first base coach in the dugout. Like, why wasn't that done privately? Oh, you want us to see it. Oh, you want to, now you're mad. He wants us to see it, or you deem it, he wants us to see it when he won't do it in the post game, and you all want him to do it publicly. Like, there's nothing he can do because no one cares. Here's the thing. No one cares. Accountability publicly, calling guys out in the post game. Like, it doesn't matter. If he did it, you'd laugh at him if it continued. If they continue playing poorly, you will laugh at him. Continue. If he every day goes out there and starts taking down players, like if he does what you want him to do in the postgame and says, you know, this guy's just not good enough, and if he doesn't get better, we're going to find someone who is better. And then they go out there and still play poorly, you're going to laugh every time he continues to say that. It's all about what happens on the field. Now, it hasn't been good enough, and God knows I would try it. At this point, why not try calling out players? Like at this point, do something, because we've all had enough of this. But it's not. It's despite what Alex Rodriguez might say, despite what anyone else might say, I'm not saying I'm perfect. I just don't believe if you take Jazz Chisholm out of that game, suddenly the next time he won't make that mistake. I don't. These are professional athletes. I don't see it. Now, Alex Rodriguez was a professional athlete. He's telling you different. Tiki Barber, professional athlete, telling you different. I don't think Wells needs to be scolded by his manager publicly or taken out of the game to recognize how many outs there are. That's just where I just differ. But there's no doubt this team is better than this. And we've seen some teams with Aaron Boone. I've always felt like Aaron Boone has gotten pretty much what I expected from the team out of them. Outside of playing better in the postseason, but that's also on the player, that's on Judge. You know, Judge has been awful the last two postseasons. Like, if that's not the case, maybe the postseason's different. And that's not to, you know, take blame away from Aaron Boone. It's the place that on the superstar makes $40 million a year and is the captain of the team. Is he void of criticism? The player's got to play better, plain and simple. But now I'm watching a team that I see, when I go through the team, when I look at the team, I don't see a bad team. Maybe you do. When I look at the lineup, and I know there's so many, why is this guy hitting here? Why is this guy putting there? I look and I see a bunch of guys with OPSs over 780, a bunch of guys with 800 OPSs, Trent Grisham hitting big home runs, Bellinger, we can't shut up about him, Stanton's having one of the better stretches he's had in a Yankee uniform, Jazz Chisholm's cooled off a little bit as of late, but since back from the injury, he's been killing it. Ben Rice hits the ball hard every time he plays. We've been loving McMahon since he's got here at third base, been playing great. I know he had four strikeouts yesterday, but clutch hit after clutch hit, sparkling play at third base after sparkling play. Anthony Volpe's had seven home runs since the All-Star break. As much as we all hate him and as bad as he's been defensively, in his offense over the last couple weeks, I'm not saying it's going to last forever, but as of right now, has been far better. I look at this team. They just added three arms to the bullpen. Max Fried's been, or was up until the last, four starts, as a Cy Young candidate. Carlos Rodon's an all-star. I look at this team and I say, this should be better. This team that Brian Cashman has put together is not a world beater. It's not the 1998 Yankees. It's not guaranteed to be the best team in baseball. But it's better than having similar records to the White Sox and to the Colorado Rockies over the last month and a half. And I'm a wins-loss guy. Plain and simple. That's what I believe in. Wins and losses. Manager wins, he's doing okay. Manager loses, he's not. And right now, the New York Yankees, for the first time really in a strong, major way for me, is underachieving at an enormous level. And this series in particular was tough in a bunch of different ways. From the momentum I thought they were building off of three wins, trade deadline acquisitions, 6-0 lead, stealing bases, looking good. And then it all came crashing down, and then the next 2 days were no shows. I put the decision Friday night on Boone, and then I put his team's mentality on Boone the next two nights. And something's got to change. They have 50 games to change it. Same thing with the Mets. Talked a lot more Yankees because it's really a dumpster fire right now. They're in third place. They've fallen out of the top wild card spot. The Red Sox have jumped past them after being up 10 games over the Boston Red Sox in June. Now they are behind a game and a half. They're only up a game and a half, I believe, in a wild card spot. They're playing ugly, mistake-riddled baseball. They just got swept by the Marlins. It's as ugly as it's been in a long time. The Mets have lost 5 of 6. It's a struggle for them. Frankie Montas wasn't good. They have an issue with the rotation. They have an issue with the top of the order not coming through. Runners in scoring position. What's new? It's been with them all year. They're a half a game out of first place. They're not playing crisp, clean baseball either. They've made mistakes. They continue to do, you know, dumb things. And Juan Soto isn't nearly the player we thought he would be, at least in clutch moments. And it's all frustrating. Both teams stink, but the Yankees have taken it to another level here. For a team that was up 7 games in the division, 10 over the Boston Red Sox, they're in third place a month and a half later. They have 50 games to figure this thing out, otherwise heads will roll. And that's what I would tell them. If I were Brian Cashman or Hal Steinbrenner, tomorrow morning I'm calling Aaron Judge and I'm like, hey, I hear you're coming back soon. Well, just know this. You guys are getting your manager fired. You guys better turn it around or I'm going to have no choice. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Come back. Continue to take your phone calls. We got you till 5 o'clock. And the warm-up show right here on The Fan. Be right back. They made Peter's update so I could talk about it. I was there Saturday night at MetLife Stadium for SummerSlam. It was awesome. I thought SummerSlam, there were some matches, as there always is, that were boring, whatever. But I thought the end of both nights were incredible. Saturday night I was there, Gunther and CM Punk had an incredible match. And let me just say this, right, in the world of Unreal, and, you know, Sal and BT have had a lot of guys on over the last couple of weeks. In the world of Unreal, where we're more aware of things that are and things that aren't, a couple things that I find interesting. One, I was able to get great seats and we were close, and it's on TV. They do a great job of making it feel real when you're close. And I've been to a couple shows with the kids. We've always been far away. You don't realize, like, up close, it's so obvious. It's much more obvious to see that it's more choreographed than actual, like, you know, it's amazing to me up close. You could see how, okay, yeah, I could see that. On TV, you're like, oh my God, how does he still get up after that? And you're like right there and you go, oh, I could see he's barely hitting him. Like, it's amazing. It's very interesting to see it up close. And then the other thing that I just find funny, because in today's day and age, like they said, they have this whole behind the scenes thing, the TV show they put out. They're literally telling you, they're showing you that they're picking who wins the Royal Rumble. It's all just a TV show and they're deciding who wins and who's going to get the push and who's over on with the fans. So they're going to do this. And then I'm watching last night, because I was there on Saturday, but I'm watching last night and, like, they have a whole pregame thing and they're like breaking it down. Oh, she needs to win for her legacy. And, like, she's never beaten this one and they've got to do this. And I'm like, why are you breaking it down like it's a real fight? We're all aware now that it's not. I don't even know what, like, I guess that, what else are you going to do? Just talk about what do we think Triple H wants to do with this? Like, I get it, but it's just so weird. It's weird to, like, now that they've, like, this is the one thing about, and if I had a chance to speak to Triple H, I don't think he wants to come on at 4 o'clock in the morning, but that would be like one of my questions. Yeah, I get that we all know now, and it's a world, different world, and social media, and you can't hide things, although they did a decent job hiding the idea that Seth Rollins was hurt. But, like, if you're going to come out with a show like that and show us everything behind the scenes, and we all know, like, you guys are deciding who wins, and it's like, we all knew this, but, like, if you're going to be that open about it, isn't it weird to, like, be that open about it and then have pre and post coverage as if it's, like, actually real? I don't know. I don't know
why. Or do a score update in the top of the hour update?
Well, yeah, that's why I feel like I can talk about it. Pete's going to put
no,
in the update.
No, I know, but if you're going to...
The results, he's like champion.
I get it. That's my point.
John Cena's champion. John Cena lost his belt to Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes is champion. And then Brock Lesnar came out at the end. We had two surprise entries in both nights, but it was fun. And it was cool to see everybody at MetLife. Bunch of ushers there were great to us. And it was really just fun. We got to keep the chairs. I'm very excited about that. The kids were very excited to be able to bring the chairs home.
Maybe in tomorrow's update, Peter could tell us that Superman ends up winning in the end of the Superman movie.
I don't know if he does, listening to Mike. He gets his ass kicked so much, I'm not sure he actually wins at the end of that thing.
That's fair. I didn't see it.
I haven't seen it either. I don't know. but it was fun to watch. And last night I thought they did a great job bringing Brock Lesnar, Seth Rollins the night before, who pulled the old Willy Wonka, where he walks out, you know, limping, and he has the crutches, and then he drops them. It was awesome. Fun night. Great time in MetLife. Wrestling's fun. It just is. It's a great time.
Kids are so into it. Did being that close ruin it at all?
Well, being that close, it's difficult for the kids to see when people stand up. There's no, it's not like theater seating when you're in like the stands or whatever.
Where right, but as far as them selling it, you mentioned that.
What's that?
Them selling themselves is actually fighting, right?
Yeah. So
did it ruin it being that close?
No, I was just talking about that before when you were walking in. It doesn't ruin it, but it's easier to see.
I know, so it doesn't, right. So.
No, I hear what you're saying. No, it doesn't ruin it, because I know that's the case. It's just a matter of like being close enough where like the angles on TV, they do a really good job of making it look a lot better than it does like right in front of your face. But still, it's all about, you know, it's all about the show. And the show was incredible. It was awesome. We had a great time. The kids were absolutely thrilled. It was an enormous crowd. The crowd was great. It was a lot of fun. Celebrities everywhere. Fat Joe came walking by. We're like, oh, geez. I literally joked. I think I turned to Hoff, and I was like, because Hoffman was there. I said, at least he's not in Miami with the Yankees. That's the last thing we need. But even no need for Fat Joe this weekend either. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. We can mix in a little bit of football talk. I talked about it on Saturday. But obviously, a lot going on in the NFC East. And you know, if you've listened to me over the last few weeks, I'm a little bit more optimistic about the Giants than I've typically been in this era. And I think maybe it's just the refreshing nature that Daniel Jones isn't the quarterback anymore. And not to completely put it on him, because we all know it's not just him. We all know it's not just him. But just the idea that we're not going into a season of Daniel Jones at the quarterback position just makes me feel just, I don't know, a lot more relieved and a lot more just like, oh, let's see what happens. I know Russell Wilson hasn't been good, but I know he can throw the football down the field. I know they'll, like, I feel so much better about the Daniel Jones era being over. I also think they brought in a lot of talent. I think they went out in free agency and added some things. I think the defensive backfield should be better. We're still trying to figure out, you know, the defensive front against the run game. We know the pass rush should be good, but the defensive front to stop the run was an issue last year. Where is that? The second corner between, you know, Banks and Flott leaves a lot to be desired there in that part of it. So you're going to need the pass rush, although, you know, Andrew Phillips and Tyler Newbin last year had really good years, and you expect them to be part of this backfield. They've added, you know, Holland and Debo, so you feel a little bit better about that. The offensive line, trying to move Evan Neal to guard. As long as Andrew Thomas is healthy, I think it's got a chance to be better. I've given you all this. But you look at this, a lot of the reason why most people are not optimistic about the Giants is you talk about the schedule. And over the last couple of days, two of the teams, you know, the Eagles are the Eagles. And whatever happens with them, whoever calls for trade requests or whatever, the Eagles are going to find a way. Roseman's one of the best GMs in professional sports, really. And they've done an incredible job. They're the Super Bowl champs. And they're going to be obviously a force inside the NFC. But when you look at the division, you look at the schedule, you look at the start of the season, and you look at Washington and you look at Dallas. And I talked a little bit about Terry McLaurin on Friday, but now as he's asking for a trade, and that one feels a little bit more like negotiations, that one feels a little bit more like eventually they'll figure it out. Although, you know, I heard Gio talking about it, and clearly if the Jets... If that actually happens, the Jets should be all over trying to get Terry McLaurin. He's one of the better wide receivers in this league. And you put him alongside Wilson, I mean, now you have a legitimate passing attack. Now, do they have a quarterback that can make the most of that? My estimation is no, they do not. But still, that would be one hell of a wide receiving tandem. But I'm assuming he's going to stay with Washington. But my point is, now you've got Micah Parsons as well, demanding a trade out of Dallas, and that feels a hell of a lot more personal. He put out a whole, you know, Instagram message and talked about, you know, all the slights he's gotten from the organization, all the comments from the owner, all the times he's tried to go to the team and negotiate a contract in good faith, you know, before other edge rushers and pass rushers signed so the contract would be more reasonable, and he's been turned around, and he's frustrated with comments about injuries and everything else, and it just feels like That's a bad situation in Dallas. We know what a disaster they've been over the last handful of years. You understand how Jerry Jones has run that organization, and the Jones family has kind of done, you know, a decent enough job with some talent evaluation and some drafting, but ultimately it's just failed. They've been terrible with their timing of contracts. Obviously, I don't love the coach they just hired. And then you look at Washington, and to me, how stupid can you be? I know they're not the same ownership group as Snyder and how disastrous that has been, but you just got, man, the greatest gift any NFL team can receive, which is a young, inexpensive, incredibly talented quarterback out of the draft. And he took your franchise from being right there with the Giants as the bottom dwellers of the NFL, let alone the NFC East, and he dragged you all the way to the NFC Championship game, beating the number one seed Detroit Lions in their building on the way. And your first order of business is to, you know, go toe-to-toe with his star wide receiver? To the point where it's gotten ugly and he wants out, or at least has demanded a trade as his next step in trying to get you to pay him? And let's be honest, I don't know how I feel about Dan Quinn as a head coach in this league. He had a great year last year, but you know, I think you could argue Kingsbury and Daniels were as much to do with it as Dan Quinn. I think we saw what happened to him after the Super Bowl in Atlanta, where they lost every big game in every big spot known to man. Even in Dallas, great start as the defensive coordinator, kind of fizzled. I don't know if he's a great coach. And I don't know right now if they'll have Terry McLaurin week one for the New York Giants. And Dallas, the same thing. Like, it's, I don't know if Micah Parsons is going to get traded. I don't know but it's ugly there. It's ugly there. So as much as I'll tell you, you know, when we talk about schedules in general, right? We talk about the Yankee schedule and, oh, it's easy. You know, it's a much easier schedule down the stretch of the season. They're playing the White Sox and they're playing the Twins, who traded everybody and they're who they own anyway, and they're doing this and that. By the way, I wouldn't mind seeing the Minnesota Twins sometime soon. Might just be what they need. But, like, the schedule's overblown. Oh, the Miami Marlins. I know they're 500 now, but I think everyone expected them to handle the Marlins. They just got swept. Schedules can change. Schedules are overrated. And right now I look at that NFC East and I don't see necessarily a juggernaut division. I don't see a Washington team that can't be beat. I don't see a start to the season that's maybe not as tough as we all think. And if the Giants can, you know, find an offense with Russell Wilson at quarterback and all the talent, and they can have Andrew Thomas, who needs to be healthy week one, I get it, and he's coming along. We'll see if he's going to be able to make it. He's the most important player on the team by a mile. I just look at what's going around that division, and I just get hung up on the idea, oh, they can't win because Washington's too good. Are you sure? Can't win because they can't beat Dallas? Well, that's been the case for the last, I don't know, 35 years. But I just have this weird feeling that it's not going to be such a miserable season. I don't know why. I don't know why my optimism is so high. But everything else going on around the Giants, while the Giants are just doing what the Jets are doing and keeping it quiet. I thought in Jet camp, obviously, Fields had a bad day in the scrimmage. I think they cut it short, the green and white scrimmage. I thought the comments made by Aaron Glenn, who obviously is the most kind of important figure here and has kind of taken over as, you know, this team is going to be about culture. This team has been sorely lacking a coaching staff and accountability, our new favorite word, and everything else. Him coming in here, taking control, understanding, you know, the franchise, playing for the franchise, even remembered it was windy during the AFC Championship game, and, you know, all those things that we love about him, and the culture building, and the everything that's gone on, and the competitiveness at camp, and, you know, it was about Will McDonald is bull rushing now. What do you attribute that to? Well, coaching, you know, players. Well, we used to talk about competing. Now we're actually competing. And everything else gone with it. I actually heard Glenn talking about getting the Jet job again and how it finally hit him listening to the Jet fan do the J-E-T-S, Jets, 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 and what it means to him to be this Jet head coach. And, you know, he picked this job as much as they picked him. He wanted to be the Jets head coach. He has taken on this challenge that so many of others have failed at. And it was just kind of refreshing after him kind of taking on this very, I don't want to say angry because that's not the right word, but very brash, even confrontational is not the right word. But when he was talking to the media, it felt like, you know, he always had a quick one-word answer, a lot of you tell me kind of like reaction. I thought he had a slam dunk in his press conference. After that, I thought he just seemed overly combative at times with the press. And to hear him the other day open up about how it's hit him and how much this means to him. Like, this team is talented enough. This is why we all thought when Aaron Rodgers came here, they would be an AFC championship team or a Super Bowl team. Or like, the team is talented enough to go out there and be one of the better teams in the AFC. Do you have that cut that I'm talking about where he's talking about being the next Jets head coach? I played it on Saturday. I think this is a really interesting piece of audio, and it's just, it's a little bit different from him, and I think it speaks to why he wants this job so badly and you know, why he's treated this as his dream job, and hopefully it's exactly what the Jets need. So listen to Aaron Glenn here in the post.
Today was the first day that it really hit me, and it hit me once I heard the fans give the J-E-T-S chant, and I don't know why, but it just hit me. It hit me pretty hard.
Yeah, I mean, and then I think he went on to say, like, I don't know why, guys. Like, he was just more open. I mean, you know, I hate to use a, like a movie cliche term, but like, he just seemed more vulnerable. Like, I don't know. He was just like, that seemed more like a guy like, hey, this is where I want to be. And it you can sense, like, not that other coaches didn't want to turn the team around, because I'm sure they did, but other coaches want to come in here and prove they can coach. Other coaches want to come in here and have the opportunity to win. Other coaches want to come in here and, you know, prove after years of being an assistant or a coordinator that they can come in here and handle the responsibilities of a head coach and turn around a franchise. But you really get the sense that this guy not only wants to do all those things, because everyone has that about them, everyone has that ego, everyone wants to prove themselves, but you just get the sense how much it means to him to be the Jets head coach and to turn this thing around after 15 years of just being a disaster. And, you know, he talked about the chance they gave him as a player, the chance they've given him as a coach. Looking forward to, because I've talked about it, when you make it so much about culture, right, when you make it so much about we're better than the previous staff, and he hasn't said that directly, but, like, that's the feel. Like, oh, why are players playing? Well, because we're coaching them. They want to be coached, and we're coaching them. And they haven't been coached in a while. That's the sense you get. And if you're going to hang it all on that, and you're going to talk about competitiveness and culture and accountability and all those words we love, you can't come out week one, get blown out by Aaron Rodgers, and have six pre-snap penalties. Like, you have to show that that works right away. And it's not easy to do that. But I've been a little down on the coach. I thought that comment right there made me feel a little bit better. Like, I just, this means a hell of a lot to him, and you can sense it. And hopefully he turns this thing around, because God knows, I don't know how the baseball season's going to end. Hopefully the football season can be a little bit better than we all expect. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Quick break. We'll come back rapid fire style if we have some time as we take you to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. We'll be right back. All right, 454, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. Let's try and get to as many calls as we can here before we get to the top. Richie in Queens. What's up, Richie?
What?
Richie, you there?
Yes, hey.
Richie.
Chris, how are you?
Good, how are you, buddy?
Okay, hey, real quick, It's great to hear what Glenn's saying. If they tackle better, less penalties. But I've heard coaches for years said
that's what I'm saying. Like, he's not alone. And we've heard Joe Judge was making coaches. He was so accountable. He made people so accountable. He was making coaches run laps. Like, we heard a lot we're going to play the hard-nosed football lunch pail like New York City is. And we've heard all this talk before. And then it's trash. Now, I'm not trying to compare Glenn to Joe Judge. He's far more accomplished, and I think he's going to do a much better job than Joe Judge. But I'm just saying, like, we have in this city heard kind of like culture building, and we're going to change things, and then it doesn't happen.
Yeah, and Chris, real quick with the Yankees, disgraceful. Yeah. And there's no way when they were up 11 games on Boston,
mm-hmm.
and to be in third place at this point, and for Boone to keep saying, you know, we've got talent, and I'm looking around, McMahon unfully proves it. Volpe, Goldsmith hasn't hit a home run in 3 weeks.
Yeah, no, he hasn't had
one home run. You know, I hope Hill comes back and gives mm-hmm. you something. I still question the bullpen. I had Duvall. He's questionable. He can be great. But, you know, Bednar, hopefully, Bird, but they still have to get Weaver and Williams.
Oh, of course.
It's disgraceful what's happened with this team. It really is. So yeah. At this point, at 112 games, it does not look good for us. It just doesn't.
No, I mean, of course not. They're going to have to figure out. The last 50 games are. I disagree with you that they're not very good, though. Like I do. That's why I'm frustrated with Boone today, because I think they are dramatically underachieving. I think they're dramatically underachieving. And, like, I know, you know, Goldschmidt hasn't hit home runs all year. When Goldschmidt was hitting 360, he wasn't hitting home runs either. But they still have Ben Rice to play first base. Ben Rice is doing fine. Trent Grisham's doing great. Bellinger's doing great. Jazz is a good hitter. He's in a little bit of a slump. He's cooled off a little bit, hit a home run yesterday. Hopefully he can get back on track. But McMahon has done great since being here. I mean, he struck out four times yesterday, but he's been very positive. Volpe's got his swing together. Now, how long will he keep it? I don't know. He's had a history of not keeping it much longer than 2 or 3 weeks, so we got to see. And his defense obviously needs to improve. But, like, And I know what we want to say. I was just talking to Fliegelman pop in. He's filling in the morning show again. Like, the comments from Jazz after the game, the comments from Boone about Jazz's play, like, you know, I agreed. Like, that's just a dumb play trying to do too much. It's just trying to do too much. Now, I don't know if the ball would have dropped if he would have been safe. He says he would have been. It doesn't matter. You can't play for that. You can't make assumptions like that that lead to double plays. Like, you just, it can't happen. It can't happen. And if he's still comfortable with that play, yeah, I have a problem with it. I have a problem with Jazz coming out and saying that that play is okay or that he wouldn't change anything. He can't be that aggressive. It's a terrible play. It's a terrible play. And Aaron Boone spoke to him, but maybe not clearly enough. But, like, I just don't, like, they've got to clean up the mistakes, but I just put it on the players more than I put it on Aaron Boone. I'm sorry. I just do. I always will. I always have, always will. Always have, always will. When Chuck Knoblauch was just staring at the ball, chewing his gum, and pointing at the ball while the Cleveland Indians were rounding the bases, I didn't scream, "What the hell is Joe Torre doing?" Like, I just didn't. Like, I just don't. But that's fine. And it's less to the point. Because the point is, they've got 50 games to turn this thing around, or he won't be the manager next year, and we won't have to have this conversation, or at least he shouldn't be. And then we'll be on the same page. Because Aaron Boone has 50 games to make this season palatable, and then he's got to go win in the postseason, too. Because I think this team is capable of it. They're getting Judge back in a couple days. They have a big series up against Texas here. And Max Fried, another big-time ace, stop-a-losing-streak performance necessary from Max Fried. It sucks that he has to do it almost every time out, but he's going to have to go do it. And the Mets welcome in the Cleveland Guardians. They're going to have to try and play better, too. Cleveland, you know, isn't very good. They don't have a closer. Go out there, take 2 out of 3 against Cleveland and the Yankees. Turn this crap around. Hopefully we're better off tomorrow. I'll see you at 2 a.m. tomorrow. The warm-up show is next. Thank you to Rami. Thank you guys for calling and listening. Talk to you tomorrow. I'm out of here. Bye-bye.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM.